Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Friday edition of The Damage Report Under Lockdown. I am joined today, as always, by the host of the Happy Half Hour, Brett Ehrlich. Welcome back.
I'm having some abdominal issues. We'll be fine. I don't know what happened, but something just happened. Maybe it was the music.
Maybe. You were...
It's your soothing voice.
I think you were clapping excitedly to the theme song, which... It had a bit of like a sort of dance vibe. We're going to have to add that in as the video. But anyway, I'm glad that you're here, Brett. And it's because we have a number of different topics to get through. We're going to be responding a little bit to Trump's press conference / speech given at one of the facilities producing protective equipment. We're going to have a bit of that. I mean, we've got some crazy stories today about ICE, about energy companies and what they're getting away with. The way the public is increasingly viewing the media. But most importantly, all of that is just nothing. Don't care about it. But we got garbage people to get to. And I'm pretty excited for my garbage people.
I'm excited for mine.
Yeah, you are?
I haven't been this excited about a garbage person in a while.
And I'm trying to do the thing we've been talking about. I have been inspired by... There are certain people in the news that want you to not just cover things that are negative, to give people hope. And so I'm glad you're on the show today. Because I'm going to talk about John Krasinski. So I have found a positive thing to add to the end of my garbage people. So I'm very excited about that. Anyway,
good for you. And I'm excited because my wife heard my plight, and suddenly I'm just going to do a Pepto shot and I'll toss a Tums or two. We'll be all right.
Has anything in America fallen apart to the extent that this program has fallen apart over the past 2 months?
I also kind of still have residual vertigo, so that shot just kind of... We're fine, John. I want everyone to watch Happy Half Hour tonight. Emma Vigeland is on.
What?
She drinks an IPA. I toss back a Negroni that later in the show I discovered did have gummy bears in it. I had totally forgotten. So everyone tune in for that. We're going to go through. It's a little Pop Trigger style. We have a segment called Patrianarchy where we determine the extent of oral, the extent to which someone needs to be held accountable for an agreement they made to their fans regarding exposing themselves in return for Billboard chart toppers. So tune in. That's a hot button issue right now.
I had not heard about that. But anyway, very excited to see that later on, to get to all the topics today. If you've already been commenting or sending in tweets or super chats or anything like that, we're going to cover that. This is a heads up to both the audience, but also to Brett. We got a load of stuff to get to, so we're going to try to keep it a little bit quicker to make sure we get to everything, because there is no way we're not going to reveal our garbage people. Anyway, so with that, why don't we jump into the news? Yesterday, Donald Trump was speaking at one of the factories producing personal protective equipment, and the very important topic. There's really nothing as important right now as the topic of testing and what the government's stance towards increased testing will be, especially as it's telling all of these states that they need to reopen, send everyone back out into society. So let's check in with Donald Trump's thoughts around testing recently.
Don't forget, we have more cases than anybody in the world. But why? Because we do more testing. When you test, you have a case. When you test, you find something is wrong with people. If we didn't do any testing, we would have very few cases.
So I looked into it, and that's not how it works. We would still have the cases. They wouldn't be logged. But the havoc that they would wreak on people's health, the fact that they would die, the actual thing about a case that matters would still exist.
So there's the perceived context in which he is saying this, and the real context in which he's saying this are different. Mm-hmm. Now, he's basically saying, hey, you guys are calling me out for having such a high case count, but that's only because we're testing more than everyone else. That's not necessarily true. Per capita, we're not testing as high as other countries have. Mm-hmm. So there's a slightly different context in which he's saying it versus how people are saying he just doesn't want to test because he doesn't want higher counts. Now, he has said that in the past. Mm-hmm. In the past, he has absolutely said it in that context.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
He says, I don't want to test people for this exact reason.
He doesn't want to test bring people in from a cruise ship because then our numbers would go up.
Exactly. He wants to fudge the numbers, mm-hmm. which what he's admitting to in those other situations is a China-style cover-up. So as much as he wants to talk trash on China, as much as China is undoubtedly covering up their total numbers, so's Donald Trump. The only difference is China's smart enough not to admit to it in front of everybody.
Yeah, that's true. And look, the first, again, if he hadn't continually given us so many reasons to believe that he does actually, that what he is concerned about is the public perception that people are dying more so than that they're actually dying. And like the story this week about Jared Kushner saying we can't order PPE because then it's going to spook the market earlier on. Like, so this is not just about responding to a media narrative. This is trying to control optics, even at the expense of many lives. But also, like, have there been people in the media that have said, why is it that America has lost so many more people than other countries? Yes, but that is by far dwarfed by the concern over the number of bodies. It's not just like, well, I'd be fine with 85,000 if Russia had 100. No, no. Yeah, we would prefer the idea that we were taking it seriously, but the most important thing is limiting the absolute number of people that die.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I ran for student body president and I won, just to put that out there. But being student body president sucks. Running for student body president is awesome and super fun and a competition. And if you're a competitive person, you feel so vibrant and alive. Yeah. That's exactly Trump. That's how I'm like Donald Trump. Like, I loved running for president and so does he. Because people have to pay attention to him and he knows what to do. There's a goal there. But governing is such a nebulous set of responsibilities that most people at least understand, and at the very least understand how to communicate to people in a time of a crisis. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest thing to do to bring America together in a time of crisis. Yeah. He doesn't either want to do that or know how to do that. It's not in his nature.
Let's turn to a little bit more on testing. Here is Donald Trump yesterday.
We have the best testing in the world. It could be the testing's, frankly, overrated. Maybe it is overrated.
That's the problem. Yeah. That is a much worse statement than the one everyone's freaking out about.
Mm-hmm. That's why I led with that one and then built to this one.
John, I'm not interested in how you make the sausage.
Trump is getting tested daily now, and so is Vice President Pence. It's overrated, but for me, I mean, I want to get tested.
That's the utter disconnect. He is looking out absolutely for himself, and the reason that he says testing is overrated is because he doesn't want it to test anymore, because he doesn't want his numbers to go up. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. Like, if he said that first thing and said, listen, the numbers are higher for us, but at least we have a more real sense of what's happening. Numbers like that are happening elsewhere in the world, maybe at that rate per capita, but I'd rather know how many cases we actually have so I can prevent more cases in the future. I want to know what I'm working with, but he doesn't. And he is so cynically saying that we should not test because it's overrated without providing any reason for that. We have underrated numbers because we're not testing enough, and testing could not be rated higher. We need more.
Yeah. And so look, one of the things that I've been talking the most about the past couple of weeks is just how continually shocked I am that there does not appear to be any protective measure or advice from medical professionals benign enough or easy enough that the right won't still say that you shouldn't do it. No matter how simple or easy or non-onerous it could be, they're still going to attack it. And as the numbers continue to rise, it is just like the fact that I can still watch news shows and go on social media and see so many people still just talking about this as if it's like a normal thing. Like, these are normal times. I'm just observing what's going on in the country. And I don't know about this comment that they've made, or like talking about the election in these ways that are so detached from the everyday horror of what we're experiencing right now. It's killing me.
The hyperbolic criticism of the social media age is that we go into our own bubbles and we don't really interact with anyone. And that has gotten exacerbated by this crisis, because it's not just figurative that we don't interact with anyone else outside our bubbles. It is literal that we don't interact with anyone else outside our direct vicinity.
Yeah.
And the only way we do it is through these algorithmically reinforced opinion bubbles.
Yeah.
And that is so much more dangerous now. Like, we've had conversations about how it just seems to be getting worse, and it absolutely is, because they've shut out any variable, any way that you could interact with someone who doesn't either hold your same opinion or hold an opinion so counter to yours that it has made its way into your feed because Facebook incentivizes interactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And look, obviously the things that I see, I'm, you know, certainly being affected by that as well. I'm seeing, like, it doesn't matter how many times I acknowledge that Twitter is fundamentally not representative of literally anything else. I still see certain things and don't see other things and get affected by it, obviously. But anyway, yeah, just like seeing, like, it doesn't even matter if it's people on the right or if it's people in the center or people ostensibly that agree with me a lot in politics, like seeing like Obamagate or like, just like this, yep, like totally disconnected, like coverage of like the stimulus bill or something. And it's like, I want to take everyone in the country and shake them and like, what the F are you doing? Like, how many people are dying literally as you're typing that tweet or saying that quippy little thing or whatever? We gotta
you
move
don't
on.
See him.
We gotta move,
yeah,
on. Yeah. It's going to be months more of this daily horror. That's all I'm saying. Okay, let's...
And it is just as entertaining to watch you unravel for me.
I'm glad someone's getting something out of it.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I've been critical of Donald Trump for his lack of expressions of empathy for those who are suffering and risking their lives during this pandemic. But I do want to acknowledge when he does attempt to show empathy, even if the result can be a little bit strange.
Vital supplies to our healthcare warriors. And they are warriors, aren't they? When you see them going into those hospitals and they're putting the stuff that you deliver, but they're wrapping themselves and the doors are opening and they're going through the doors and they're not even ready to go through those doors. They probably shouldn't. But they can't get there fast enough. And they're running into death just like soldiers run into bullets in a true sense. I see that with the doctors and the nurses and so many of the people that go into those hospitals, it's incredible to see. It's a beautiful thing to see, but...
it's just not how you communicate that sentiment that you saw in a movie once.
I know. Like, I feel like they're... Like, now that's in my brain, and I have to get it out. Like, I have to drill into... a lobe. Pick a lobe, drill into it. Like, soldiers run into bullets... If you're a soldier, be careful. Don't run into the bullets.
Like,
he's trying.
What is he? That's it.
Him trying.
It's all movies. He's
Thank
never
you, Trump, for trying. A little.
And then, like, Michael Schur is on the show on TYT today, and he was talking about how this very obvious campaign trip was paid for by the White House, and that's what he's doing. And so this is his first real foray recently out into the world, after trying to replace his campaign rallies with daily press briefings, which didn't really help him and only made a star out of Anthony Fauci and brought us such amazing moments as, can we look into injecting people with disinfectant? That's out of the way. Now he's back out there, but he can't go to a group of Trump supporters, so you don't hear the cheering. And he doesn't get the crowd feedback. You watch him bomb.
Yeah, that's
true. Watch
him
bomb.
Which is impossible at a rally for him.
What he could rely on at a rally is, even if he said something stupid, which that's what the rally's all about, the worst he'd get is like a clap because they know they have to.
Yeah.
Instead,
they're happy to be there.
Silence. So he's just flailing because for the first time in forever, he hasn't either A, had people in front of him losing their minds with support, or someone he can disparage openly that is his clear enemy, which he leverages in a press conference for his own supporters to then wildly lose their minds at home.
But he could, like, He could be at a rally in 2 weeks or something. Like, it seems crazy. I don't think they'll do that, but he could do it. He'll go to some Republican state and if like DeSantis is like, sir, that seems a little bit extreme. Shut up, DeSantis. And DeSantis will be like, okay, I'll open up the Tampa Dome or whatever. I don't know. You probably know the name of the particular dome, but they're gonna do it. They're gonna do it, and they're gonna do it soon. So what we've learned today so far is don't run into the bullets. It's like they're wrapping themselves, and it's a beautiful thing that they run into the door and they're not ready to run into the door. It's like he was made earlier today.
You know how the brain is 80% water? Like, so are his speeches. Like, 80% of his speeches are just nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going and they're rapping, and when they have what you do, they have it. And then they rap, and how much of that was just no sentiments? No concepts communicated. And then he's like, then it's like, he's like, I have to give an image. It's bullets going at soldiers. Say something like, we are in a debt. We have a great debt to you for the sacrifices you make. And I don't know how anyone does it. I am in awe of your sacrifice. Say that.
Brett,
those are the kinds.
Presidential. I want to take a look at this story being reported now by Reason.com. It involves ICE agents over the course of literally years propositioning women at massage parlors for sex work, effectively, supposedly to track down human trafficking. And it turned out to be more of a disaster than even that description really gets across. So let me catch you up a little bit on this. Federal agents had at least 17 sexual encounters in massage parlors around Mojave County, Arizona, over a five-month period in 2018, according to new research from the Howard Center for Investigative Journalism at Arizona State University. Internal ICE documents show these activities had the blessings of agent supervisors. So the plan was to have these sexual encounters as part of an investigation, and it wasn't just like a thing they did secretly behind their supervisors' backs. They had the okay to do that. An HSI memo on the investigation describes instance after instance of an undercover federal agent telling a masseuse to, quote, masturbate him. In several instances, ICE agents paid extra for masseuses to strip naked or go topless while doing that. And at the Reason article, which you can find available right now, they go into a lot more detail about how graphic some of these requests were and things like that, just so that you know how insane this was. To give you an idea, some of the reports are peppered with descriptions like, quote, the female was very skinny with small breasts. As part of an investigation, I'm not sure exactly why that sort of detail would be noted or would be a part of it, but if this was just guys trying to use their job to be able to have, apparently, the federal government pay for them to get involved in sex work, then yes, if that was your goal, then it sort of makes sense.
And the report says that there were only like three misdemeanor charges from one raid incident.
Exactly.
There are different levels of using your position of power to your own benefit. Like, listen, if I was a police officer, maybe I'd turn on my siren to get through a red light. Mm-hmm. This is the opposite of that. It gets worse and worse. Like, I can't, I, I can't fathom something more like exaggerated as a satire.
What
like,
about
this is exactly what you're
how
what,
about
oh,
that?
Yeah, how about the
fact
name?
That it's Operation Asian Touch. And that's not like what the Washington Post is calling it. That's what they called it.
Like, and frequently when you come up with a secret name for your project, you're trying not to tip the hat too much as to what it actually is. Like, yeah. It is such, it's exactly what you're afraid they would try to do. And the name really underscores the creative minds behind this sting operation, yeah. And how non-creative they are. But like, that's it. You are the worst part is these are the people you're trying to protect. These are the victims
you are supposed to try to protect.
Right. That's what I mean.
And that you
but
say
like,
you are.
Whose traffickers, whose captors are using their bodies to profit off of in a way that is a version of modern day slavery, right? Like that's what it's compared to. And you're doing the slave thing.
Yeah.
You are taking advantage, you're victimizing them further in a way that isn't like it, and it isn't like when you do a drug deal. This is bad. I feel so bad because I'm trying to compare it to things when I don't even think I need to compare it to things. Like everyone knows how terrible this is. But like if there's a drug deal, you don't do the drugs.
Yeah.
In front of you don't do the drugs. You enter into an agreement that exposes that this thing is happening and then you bust the bad people.
Exactly. Yeah. This would be like if you believed that people were being forced to sell drugs with the threat of violence. And
like
so you bought the drugs from them, but you also like physically assaulted them during it. Like you're saying that you care about the victim, but you are yourself victimized. If they are victims, it's of the sort of thing that you're doing to them. And the calling it Operation Asian Touch, the fact that they said not all of the massage workers that the ICE agents visited would agree to sex acts when requested. And their memos muse that this is probably because the women were onto their agents' identities. So assuming that they're being honest there, that is awful, because what they're doing is they're saying, well, if they do it, then hypothetically we can arrest them. If they don't do it, that's just proof of how much criminality is going on here.
It's so weird. Like, are you allowed to do the drugs if you're a narc? I don't know. And
probably.
Then also, do 17 of you need to do the drugs at or more so that eventually you can bust one like make three charges? No.
Yeah. And so look, the reason I want to talk about this was obviously because this is insane and people need to know about this. We have talked for over the course of years about abuses of various sorts among ICE agents. This is a particular genre of those abuses that should get way more attention than they currently do. And this story should serve as a reminder of the fact that this is not like a standout story that is the only one of its type involving ICE agents and the broader world of law enforcement, police officers as well. This sort of sexual exploitation is all over the place in Border Patrol, ICE agents as well. They are given power over these people in a society that is trained to think that the victims themselves are horrible people. It is a toxic, toxic stew. And people get into the system sometimes to take advantage of it. And very often, even if it becomes news, not a lot of people really talk about it. This is national news. It's not a gigantic thing. How could it not be? It astounds me.
Yep.
You might have seen this video going around of reporter Kevin Vasey, TV reporter for News 12 Long Island, being berated by Trump fans. Take a look.
Thanks. I'm just trying to get by on the sidewalk. That's all.
Well, you shouldn't be here. You're fake news. You stopped airing the Trump briefings, and you keep airing Cuomo briefings. Go home.
Traitor.
You fake news. Go home.
You're destroying something in Long Island.
You are the enemy of the people.
You are fake news.
You are the enemy.
We all know it. You are fake news. We know about your liberal agenda. We know you want to keep your job. We get it. You're not getting advertiser dollars in right now.
You're not going to answer, so you're just going to go live.
Yes, I am getting a paycheck.
I'm very happy, but other people are not getting paychecks, and they're not getting.
That's why we're here. You used to be a good channel at one time.
You allow people.
I don't know what happened to you.
Don't lie. fake news.
Trump, stop airing.
You're a hack.
Crap fly on your Facebook page. It's disgusting. You're disgusting. You're the virus.
There we go.
Away. 6 feet.
Yeah. Put me on TV too. My name is Rich. I'm looking like you.
Kevin, tell the truth, Kevin. Come on.
Fake news is not essential. Fake news is not essential. Fake news is not essential. Fake news is not essential.
Okay, that was something. What really struck me about that, Brett, was that it wasn't the individual things that anyone at that protest was saying to this individual. It was that they were all saying something like, Is he like the Michael Jordan of Long Island? Everyone knew who he was. Everyone had something that they were prepped to say to this reporter. It was the whole protest became about the fact that a member of the media was covering it. And again, if you're organizing a protest, ostensibly you want media coverage.
There's so much bad about that. There's so much it proves to me. One, just whenever you're at a place brimming with such vitriol, and then you see a kid near the mom who is losing it at some guy, the looks on all those kids' faces are, you watch neural pathways being forged. Kids who cross-reference what mom tells them to do on a normal basis, like don't yell at people, don't be mean, be kind, which I'm sure she tells her kid, against what's happening now, which is mom just berated a stranger. And everyone around here is so mad and angry. Mm-hmm. It's got to be terrifying to that kid. And also this kid's going through an already terrifying situation.
Yeah, and not understanding what's going on.
It's disturbing. It is so wildly disturbing.
Yeah. Just the – like I don't know Kevin Vesey. I don't know News 12 Long Island. If you are in the chat and you follow it, if he is routinely – insane or offensive or something, like if there is anything that justifies this uniform enraged deranged reaction, then I would love to know what it is. I'm assuming the thing that has caused it is the fact that these people have been trained over the course of their lives in a general sense, but certainly over the past few years by Trump, that if anyone tells you anything that makes you even briefly uncomfortable, you do not have to accept it. It doesn't matter if it comes from a scientist or a professor or a doctor, a member of the media, anyone whose job it is to understand things and communicate a more accurate understanding of reality, those people are your enemy and you don't have to trust them. And in fact, you can make yourself feel really good by just attacking them in a deranged fashion. That's what they've been trained to do, and so that's what they're doing. They go to these protests to tell people that small businesses are essential or whatever, but mainly to attack the people that they hate.
But we still see them suffering the consequences, and some of them change their tune. There's so much internal problem with their logic. But we're covering on Young Turks later today. There are multiple instances. Like, there was a woman at a Trader Joe's who went and yelled at someone, which already it's hilarious, yelling at someone in a Hawaiian shirt that you're mad at them.
Yeah.
He's having a chill day. You lose the moral high ground berating someone behind whom is a coconut carved to look like a monkey. But yelled at him and said, I don't need to wear a mask. And wouldn't you know it, after that's done, she is now sick. There's a Uber driver or a rideshare driver in Jupiter, Florida, who said he didn't take it seriously. Now he is sick and he wishes he took it seriously. And that is the muscle they don't have, which is the ability to empathize, the ability to take things as a whole and rationally appraise them and live their lives according to the conclusions they make based on what the situation dictates a reasonable person to do. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to be reasonable. They want to feel right. And that's the problem. And I will say this about local news. This is a local news guy. And I'm sure they know their local news guy because people like this, most people anyway, before there was Facebook, there was a hole in their understanding of the world that was filled by local news. That's how you got that extra bit of something to talk about with your friends about what's happening. It was a robbery, a burglary, a kid who was kidnapped. You got the local news that filled that void for you. But now that has been filled with crazy Trump sycophant news content. And we have this service that we're trying out here at TYT. It's a service that just kind of shows you what's trending on the internet, not just Twitter, but specific articles that are doing well. And the ones that pop the most are these ones that just go out to like the Daily Wire and the Daily Caller, because that is where all that vitriol is concentrated and it gets a bump. And instead of things needing to happen out in the world for us to see them, for that to be our perception of how the world really is, mm-hmm. it's just fed fake ideas of what the world actually isn't into these little small media pockets.
Yeah.
And then those are poached and amplified on a national scale, trying to turn that into people's perception of what's actually happening when it was all manufactured from the get-go.
Yeah. Just one thing I want to respond to in defense of the woman at the Trader Joe's. She now has the symptoms. She does not appear to take it seriously, though. She still seems to not take it seriously. But yeah, and just as a reminder, she's the most recent example of this, of I don't need this, it's all a hoax, it's made up, and then gets sick. But you had, there's someone who was, against the rules, cutting hair in New York, who's now sick.
Yeah.
And that, look, I'm sure for economic reasons, but the warning was accurate. And again, I hope this person ends up being fine. But the people who were, I forget which state it was, but one of the organizers of the lockdowns got sick, and all the pastors saying that they had, you know, the blood of Christ or whatever, and then they ended up getting sick and many of them died. You can't stubborn away the virus. That just doesn't work. That's not how it
works.
The
last little bit is there's this libertarian streak in them that's like, don't tread on me. But they forget that everyone is a me. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you're treading on them. You're treading on other people. That's the reason we have the laws you agree with, is to protect you. Yeah. Everyone is an individual, and we have made these decisions because, as much as they want to say it's like the flu, more people have died from this than died from the flu this year. So it's much, much worse. And those smaller numbers are the direct result. They could be much, much higher if not for the actions of people putting the restrictions in place that you are complaining about.
Yeah, I mean, God only knows how bad it would be today if we had never –
And your dear leader's claiming credit for that.
Well, yeah,
and your 100%. Dear, and Trump is trying to take credit. He literally tweeted a brag saying everyone should thank their lucky stars for me, the president, for making the governor's regulations happen and the lowered numbers happen. Well, yeah. Those things that lowered the numbers that he's now taking credit for which previously he had literally said outright, I don't take responsibility for them. Those things that yielded that success for him are things that governors who disagreed with him put in place.
And he's telling them to stop.
Yeah.
Because again, doesn't take responsibility. Back a few years ago, California was the site of horrendous, deadly wildfires. It is in the best of years, but it was particularly bad back in 2017, 2018. And as a result, one of the power companies, Pacific Gas and Electric, had a massive fine levied against them, at least up until recently, because California regulators just yesterday suspended a $200 million fine against Pacific Gas and Electric as punishment for the utility's neglect of electrical equipment that ignited a series of deadly wildfires. It had been blamed for the 15 different wildfires that killed more than 100 people and destroyed more than 25,000 homes and other buildings over a two-year period. So there are still some fines that it will face, but $200 million being erased is certainly nice. It's a good deal if you can get it.
Yeah. I understand suspending certain aspects of a penalty if the implementation of that penalty would harm more people in the long run. I just don't think that's the case here. I think, yes, they can. I mean, yeah, they should rework whatever, restructure whatever. They're in a bankruptcy currently that we're trying to get them out on the other side of, to be a cleaner, more responsible company that takes its obligation to have functioning, safe infrastructure more seriously. I would just hope that in this time, we're also looking at the incomes of their CEOs. Mm-hmm. And another aspect of this is we are going into there's people on these councils who are listen. I don't know who they're listening to. If they're listening to PG&E say, actually, it would be a lot easier if we didn't pay this fine because you want electricity, don't you? And then I guess the people on the board just go, yeah, that makes sense. There's a little bit of silver lining in that people are not being charged extra for their, you know, overages or whatever in this time. Like the amount that PG&E is allowed to take in from people making it through this crisis has been lessened. But we also need to look to something else that's happened where like banks have intercepted the stimulus fund or the aid funds from people who are overdrawn. So on the one hand, if you go to PG&E and say, we understand things are hard, so we're not going to go as hard on you right now. But then you go to the actual people whose money is being taken by PGE eventually to pay those bills, and you're intercepting it in the meantime. Yeah. That's a double standard.
Exactly. And I want to give people information about the portions of the fines and consequences that are still active. It's still being punished by regulators in the form of nearly $1.9 billion that it won't be able to collect through higher electricity rates and other fees passed on to the roughly 16 million people who rely on the nation's largest utility for power. Regulators also are restricting some of the $425 million in tax savings the utility may realize from the $1.9 billion penalty. That last bit makes seemingly all the sense in the world. They are saying effectively that we're getting rid of one portion that less directly helps people so that they can do the part that will help people more. I guess if it ends up being right, then good. But the damage that was done is just insane. And I know that it's negligence, it's not malice or anything like that, but the fact that, I mean, so many people lost their lives. I mean, 25,000 houses and buildings, unimaginable damage to so many people's lives, even those who weren't injured, weren't killed. This is the sort of deal that, I mean, no one owes to, like, it's the sort of thing that, yeah, they're big and they're powerful. They have people on that commission that are probably connected to them financially. If not now, then perhaps in the future. It's the same story that we see all the time.
Yeah, I agree. And it's heartbreaking and stinky. And just to go back to how bad it was before that, like, people knew. People know that they have so much infrastructure they need to build up. And how much it takes on a yearly basis to do that. And they just hadn't. Mm-hmm. It is negligence, but that's why they call it gross negligence, because it's real gross.
Exactly, exactly. Sort of willful negligence. It is Friday once again, and that means it's time to take out the trash. Okay, Brett, it is the time we've all been waiting for. Time to fill up the trash can. Mine already has a bunch of, like, protein bar wrappers in it and some paper. But I think that we need to put some of the worst people in the country in it. And you get to go first.
I just love that your trash can's just protein bars and paper. The two things a growing boy needs to survive.
I'm stuck in quarantine. What do you want me to make? Anyway, so who do you have for us today?
Today it's Papa John.
Oh.
Papa John has gone viral in a way that actually is somehow less trashy than the other times he's gone viral, but still wildly cringeworthy. He went on TikTok, and as a way to fill the time, he did an MTV Cribs-style tour of his house, mm-hmm. and somehow manages to creep everyone out within the first 30 seconds.
Howdy, Papa John. Welcome to my crib.
Ooh. Ooh. What?
Start off with the clock. Eagles go up several thousand feet. They made all the way down, and right before they hit the earth, they separate so they don't get hurt or killed. Perfect timing. Eagles mating clock spins four times an hour.
What is the thing about the eagle? What is that?
It's a clock. Everything's weird. So, like, you see this giant, gaudy sculpture, and it's, like, 20 feet tall, and it's two eagles, and you're like, well, jingoistic, yes, I understand. But then he communicates that it's not just eagles. It's eagles doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 20-foot-tall sculpture of eagles doing it in his foyer. In an $11 million house, which is it's literally the most expensive house in Louisville, Kentucky, from which he was recorded at one time dropping the N-bomb on a company call, just so you know why he's a garbage person in the first place and why you haven't seen him so much lately. It's because of that.
Yeah.
But not only is it eagles doing it, he also reveals that it's a clock. So you're like, oh, where are the hands? Where are the numbers? Anything like that? No. He reveals that the way his 20-foot-tall eagle's screwing clock works is it rotates every 15 minutes. So in order to understand how his eagle's doing it clock works at a whopping 20 feet, you need to know what 15-minute period you're in throughout the day so you can track. Oh, we are 3/4 of the way through this 15-minute period in the day.
So it's like if a regular clock can narrow it down to the minute, and like, you know, we use AM, PM, so hypothetically, if you didn't see that, it could narrow it down to at least half the day. His, as long as you've narrowed it down to 15 minutes, he can get you the rest of the way. That is not very useful.
It's a clock.
That's the rich.
If you have a watch.
Yeah. And by the way, can I just show what vibes I'm getting from that statue? It's very strong, these vibes.
Zoolander wrestling.
It's a metaphor. Also, that happened.
Oh, my God.
That is the vibes. And the, like, I, look, have I eaten of the Papa John's pizza? Yes, I have, and I kind of like it.
So good.
It seems weird, though, that it results in a person having that ostentatious a level of wealth that it no longer even makes sense metaphorically. Yeah.
It's a moat. Choice. He has a moat.
He has
and
a
I think
moat.
He has, like, a train, an underground train that goes to different parts of his house. Something like that.
Wow. The rich waste money on a lot of stuff, and they can be very disconnected from what's really going on in this country and what's going to happen. I will say that one of the purchases from a rich individual that I get the most and have the most respect for is that he has at least the self-awareness to prepare with a moat, considering what he's contributing to societally.
He also is wearing a t-shirt that says Papa on it.
Yeah, he needs to remind people of who he is. His pants say John on the butt. Anyway, okay, very good garbage person. For my garbage person, it's actually going to be garbage people, and I've been waiting some time to say this. It is these individual, no, not these guys, actually. It's just guys, but when you Google guys, this is the sort of picture you get. Guys, American guys are my garbage people, but why? For a very specific reason. It has to do with the pandemic. A new study shows that men in the U.S. report less intention than women to wear face coverings, especially in counties that don't mandate wearing them. But that by itself would not be enough. It's not just that they won't do what's necessary to protect them, and by doing that, they will hurt others. It's the reason men more than women agree that wearing a face covering is shameful, not cool, a sign of weakness, and a stigma. And these gender differences also mediate gender differences' intentions to wear a face covering. So because it's not cool, because it makes you look weak, they're going to risk their own health and possibly harm others, possibly kill others. Garbage.
You're such wussbags. Like, that's the thing, is they'd be like, you snowflake cuck West Coast liberal. It's like, no, you're triggered. You think your masculinity rises and sets with whether you're wearing a face mask?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you think it is. Like, that's, you feel like Samson, you will lose your power if people can't see what? Your jaw? Get over it. Get over it.
Yeah.
It's like you're being a good dad. You're being a good dad by setting an example. Do that.
You would think. It's like, it's not a dichotomy, but it's like men are presented with looking weak and being weak, and they will take the being weak every single time.
That's funny.
And that's just the case. It matters. It's not just a choice for yourself. It's that you will get the people around you sick, potentially. You will kill people. If one man does this, maybe it doesn't matter. If millions of men are being affected in this way and making mask-wearing decisions based on those feelings, that has a toll. We don't know exactly how many people will get sick or die as a result of it, but you can be assured that there will be some. That because they are so fundamentally weak, they will kill people. And by the way, oddly so, it is a piece of protective equipment you wear. What other piece of protective equipment has ever been considered not cool? Like the tank of air that a fireman wears, lame. Knights in shining armor. That armor makes you look weak. What do you need that armor for, knights? Who thinks that?
The Dothraki do look badasser.
Than
the men in the iron suits.
Maybe. I don't know. Our soldiers, you know, you always see them with like their body armor. Wusses. Who needs body armor? Who thinks this way?
By their logic, they should go around naked. Why cover anything up? Take off the shirts. Take off the pants. Take off the undie pants.
Yeah. And
traipse about.
Yeah. And men are also less likely to believe that they'll be seriously impacted, which is particularly ironic, they point out, because men are being killed at higher rates already. Don't be so stupid that you die. It can't be masculinity.
I don't care if
following
you're so
it kills you as a man.
I don't care if you're so stupid that you die. I care that if you're so stupid that you kill me.
That's also true. Don't be so stupid you kill me. And it's not just a thing of just right now. Women were also more likely to wear face masks during the SARS outbreak and the H1N1 outbreak, according to a 2014 literature review. This is just a thing that apparently happens.
Yeah, I also wonder if that's just like that's one less thing I have to like pink tax myself for. You know, like, there's an extra layer of stuff. Maybe. I don't know.
But
that's me being totally...
But I did see in the audience, I don't know if it's Jamie or Jaime, but pointed out where I'm turning to next, because I don't want to just point out the bad people. I also want to point out the good people, and so let's do that. A man I used to watch quite a bit of, Stone Cold Steve Austin, had put up this photo saying, running errands on the mean streets of LA. He's got a mask. It's a little bit too small. Cuts off his circulation, but he still thanked the person who made it for him. You would think Stone Cold Steve Austin has, through his pro wrestling career, bought a little bit of get off my back about whether I'm a man enough. Mm-hmm. But MMAHAN51... is a true alpha male. He's going to tell him what the deal is. Says, the mask goes against your reputation. Stay strong. Be a rebel. Don't conform. Cool mask, but strip off the communism. To which Stone Cold responded, shut up, dude.
I love that they're saying that conformity is communist, when then you can look at all the goose-stepping Nazis in the same outfit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just shut up. Here's the thing. There is an ongoing battle in a million different forms, influencing what men think about men and what they're supposed to do. And look, I get someone in the comments was like, this is sexist to attack all men. Okay, whatever. I care about whether men are doing something that's going to harm themselves and others. And clearly they have been trained to think that protecting yourself is weak. And so thank God there are people like Stone Cold who are telling them that they're not, you know? So if you are an icon of American masculinity, post a photo of yourself wearing a mask, attack the haters who attack you for it. Like, we've got to fight back against this.
It's like Iron Man too. It's like using Batman, Iron Man, using technology to protect people. Cause you're also protecting others when you do that. I will say one other thing that I almost put in happy half hour, but we didn't have time for it. Was along the men route. There was a New York Times story about they surveyed parents who are teaching their kids and doing everybody's staying home and trying to homeschool their kids. Something like 70 to 80% of men said that they are actually doing more work than their spouses than their females, and only like 3% of women agreed with that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I did like that.
Made me so happy.
And you just because you mentioned Iron Man and Batman, but it's going around all over the place. But there's a quote from The Dark Knight Rises: "The mask isn't for you; it's for the people you care about." They've been trying to teach us. Have we been listening? That is the question. And some, unfortunately, have not. Really fast, Jimmy Joe says, I actually watched wrestling during Stone Cold, The Rock, Kurt Angle era. That is exactly the era that I watched wrestling during, and I do very much miss it.
I would like to issue a correction.
What's that?
Everyone called me out for in the comments I'm seeing. It was apparently there's a movie called Dodgeball that is not Zoolander. I said Zoolander with Wrestling the Bull.
I didn't even realize that you said Zoolander. Yes, it's Dodgeball.
I assume you would have corrected me if you'd known. But alas, no. I've only seen Dodgeball once and I've seen Zoolander like four times. So that's why I defaulted to that.
And I only watched the first half of Zoolander, but I've watched Dodgeball many times. It's like, feel free to disagree with me in the comments. It's very sad to me that I don't feel like Dodgeball really holds up at all, which makes me very sad because I really liked it when I first saw it. But anyway, now, what do you all think? Who do you think were the greatest examples of American garbagedom? So we asked you and polled you, and 14,000 of you responded on the community tab on the Damage Report YouTube channel. And so of the possibilities with Trump, Elon Musk, Bill Barr, and Jacob Wohl, Trump wins with 24%. Although the second place race between Elon Musk and Bill Barr, it's pretty close. People not
happy
with Bill Barr.
Closer than previous
But you're saying usually Trump like runs away with it.
I wonder if all of the above absorbed a lot of the wishy-washies.
Yeah, I would like to see a breakdown of the all of the above, what their second choice would be. But yeah, so I'm glad that some people are going to put all of the above. But at a certain point, you got to choose. And pretty close on those three. Jacob Wohl is garbage, but people don't care that much about him. So yeah, anyway, good job everybody who voted. Thank you so much. 14,000 of you. Wow. When these massive multi-trillion-dollar stimulus bills are being considered, there's a lot of fear that a number of different industries, their lobbyists in DC, are sort of lurking in the shadows and trying to get the interests of the people that they support to be prioritized. We've already seen evidence of that in some of the past bills, and now we have reason to believe that we should be cautious about upcoming efforts as well. And joining us to break down one area of this is investigative reporter for TYT. Welcome back to the show, T.Y. Chang. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Nice to see you, John.
So
good haircut.
Thank you very much. And yours as well. We're trying to keep it as professional as we can under the conditions we're in. So you had an article recently, Wall Street and Big Oil see a Democratic compromise on fossil fuel bailout. Can you explain basically what you describe in the article?
What happened was basically a high asset private client report that they give out to the, you know, the super rich. And what it was a meeting between the biggest lobbying firm in Washington, D.C., Akin Gump, with Morgan Stanley, the giant investment firm. Mm-hmm. And they had a private tele-meeting, basically over the phone. I think five members from Akin Gump, including former congressman from Texas, Lamar Smith, a big climate change denier, huge fossil fuel supporter. And also on the other side, they had nine members from the Morgan Stanley equities and dealing with North American oil and gas. And what they discussed basically was going over what can we do to get a bailout for oil and gas. And so it was an inside look, and it included in the report a link to the audio of this meeting. Mm-hmm. And it's so basically it's a look at, it's like being the fly on the wall in one of these really high level meetings where they're really pretty open talking about what they plan to do. And the essence of it was, let's give basically do a barter. Let's give the renewables the tax credits we took away that they got under the Obama administration. And in exchange, let's get some stuff for the oil bailout, like buying oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And so they were very blunt about it. And they even talked about opening up the economy. They said, ultimately, that's the only way we're going to save the oil and gas is opening up the economy. And they had no discussion about how many people would die. They didn't mention that at all. So it was basically a very blunt meeting. It's the kind of meeting you don't really usually get access to. So It's sort of like a fascinating look at how the big boys are operating in the sense that these are the big money people meeting with big oil lobbyists. This particular firm, Akin Gump, is the largest. They describe themselves as the largest lobbying firm in Washington, D.C., but they also represented in the most recent filings, both ExxonMobil and Chevron, two of the biggest oil companies in the world and the biggest one in the United States. And they paid them $50,000 each to the Akin Gump for their lobbying efforts. So they basically were very honest with each other, opening and talking about, even with a sense of humor, about one of their members, the Akin Gump team, who used to work for Senator James Inhofe, you know, from Oklahoma, a big, huge oil and gas supporter, and, you know, someone close to Harold Hamm, who donates a lot of money to Donald Trump. And Ryan Smith said basically, or Ryan said that, you know, they were laughing that he wears a cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. And then they got to talking about, oh, you know, what can we do to save oil and gas? And so that was an inside look. And I asked Congressmember Nanette Barragan, who's from California, from the L.A. area, and represents the L.A. area. And I asked her to comment on this. And she did give us a comment back saying that it was basically unconscionable that they would be discussing using money that's supposed to go to help families and workers and small businesses to recover, to use that to help giant oil and gas industries, you know, basically pay off their debt and make more profit. So that was it was a good, and she is the lead sponsor, along with four other Democrats, of the lead introducer, along with 38 Democrats who have co-sponsored the Rewind Bill. The Rewind Bill is basically designed to counteract everything the Trump administration has done that's anti-environment, from the EPA to Department of Interior oil leases to giving out money from the stimulus for oil and gas.
Yeah.
And she's a key sponsor of that. So it was good that she also recognized, or at least recognized, the importance of this meeting, that this was an inside look at their game.
Well, I'm glad that there are people inside that are watching out for this. So what I want to talk about a little bit is the tactics. So it seems like what you're saying is they're not expecting necessarily at these oil companies to just be handed a bunch of money in the stimulus directly. That's why they're looking for other tactics where money can be routed to them, but perhaps can be pitched as, you know, being concerned with national security or something like that, right? They don't expect to just be handed a lump sum of billions of dollars.
Right, because there's been too much opposition by Democrats and by environmentalists against that, and by people, because they've been writing in to Congress and complaining and excuse me, and emailing. And so, but they have done things, for example, like the Federal Reserve made a new ruling just this week saying that the loans that are intended to help small and mid-sized businesses survive, to be able to pay their bills and actually survive this pandemic, that money can be used by oil and gas companies, or any companies, to pay off debt. And that in particular helps oil and gas companies, in particular shale oil companies, because they went into a lot of debt in the last number of years. They actually were drilling just to pay off debt in some cases. Mm-hmm. So for them to be able to use Federal Reserve loans to pay off debt is in a way a bailout.
Yeah.
That's not the name they use for it, but that's actually what it is in a way.
Exactly. Well, and they seem to be pitching it internally as it being that. Well, one of the things I'm curious about is, obviously we saw in the initial economic falling apart as the pandemic started to spread, that some of these fossil fuel companies were particularly hard hit, and that the troubles they were having had secondary effects that hurt other industries too. And it seemed as if they were sort of a force multiplier for the damage that these sorts of issues can cause to the economy. And in response early on, there were some individuals, like I think Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who were saying that this is an indication that we need to be working on some sort of it might have actually been some climate change activists that I follow, but that this is an indication that we need to start talking about some sort of medium or long-term winding down of these industries, that as long as they exist, they're not only, for instance, like with the pandemic, contributing to lung problems that make the pandemic more fatal, but also that they are doing additional damage to the economy, and that if we just return to the status quo, that will still linger around for the next pandemic. As you're talking to these representatives, it's good to know that they're on the watch for these attempts to bail out the industries, but are there any larger, more forward-looking conversations about what might need to be done akin to some of the reforms that happened with Wall Street during the last recession?
Yes, I think that's part of the problem. The progressive Democrats are pointing out that the more centrist Democrats are basically ignoring the environment. At each stimulus, we're on the fifth stimulus bill now that they're voting on in the House today. And each one of the stimulus bills, they've said, okay, the next one, we're going to have something for renewable energy sources.
Yeah.
The next one. Now we're already on the fifth, and there isn't anything. And the argument is, well, we've got to recover the economy, put everything we can in. And that's not how one should really recover the economy, because this is a good opportunity, unfortunately, through a pandemic, a deadly pandemic, where it's a good opportunity to wake up, basically, and smell the coffee, smell what's going on. We need to change the way we're consuming. We need to change the way we're taking, creating energy. And this is a good opportunity to do that, because if we're putting in trillions of dollars into businesses like fossil and fuel or any other businesses to survive, we can also put in trillions of dollars into renewable energy. Because once that's done, those are energy sources that are permanent. And then, at least 20 years without having to put in extra money. And that's the way for the country to recover. Building them will create a lot of jobs and also do a lot for the economy. In fact, there was one economist from Columbia who said, had we put in the money that we put into the 2008 and 2009 Great Recession, that money, if it had been put in renewables, would have actually produced more jobs and created more for the economy than it did supplying it directly to companies. Because a lot of the companies just used the money to buy back their stock. This time, the Democrats are pushing against that, saying, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't use it just to buy back your stock. But yes, that is a big concern. And, Bernie Sanders pointed out that, it's going to take $16 trillion for the Green New Deal. Joe Biden says his Green Deal is $1.7 trillion. From what I've seen, the reality is it's going to be a lot closer to what Bernie said, if not even higher than what he said, of $16 trillion. But you got to start somewhere, and that will be a big expense. But, right now we've lost within the renewable energy sources, the energy companies, they've lost hundreds of thousands of employees to layoffs. So all the gains made in the last 5 years for renewable energy companies have now been lost in terms of the workforce. They've been laid off. Nobody's talking about that. They all keep talking about, and certainly we should talk about the layoffs in the fossil fuel, because they can be transitioned to other, other industries. But no one's talking about those who are already in the renewable energy industries. 17.2% of the energy created in the United States this first quarter into April was from renewable energy sources, in this order: hydropower, wind, solar, and then geothermal, in that order. And then coal was only 17.1%. That's the first time that's ever happened. Coal 12 years ago generated 50% of the energy, of the electricity in the United States. So, and the other thing I didn't get to say was that the fossil fuel companies themselves and their analysts are already saying to the fossil fuel companies, it's time to start investing in renewables, that they need to transition. They're saying that for their own survival as a company, they need to start transitioning. Everyone recognizes the transition is happening, but they're trying to slow it down so they can make as much short-term profit as they can, which in the long term, doesn't help any of us.
Okay, that's potentially a good sign. Thank you for adding that.
Take care.
Two of the individuals who have recently been talking about moving out of California and going to a place that respects their liberties more, that's Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, also spent a little bit of time recently on Joe Rogan's extremely popular podcast. And during that time, they talked about the coronavirus, and in doing so, spread quite a bit of misinformation. Joining us now to break down some of what they were telling literally millions of people is a senior researcher for Media Matters, Madeline Peltz. Welcome back to The Damage Report.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. So I'm curious to find out, I saw your article, I read it. I'm not a habitual listener of the podcast. So if we could go over a little bit of what they said, how wrong they were, what did you make of the conversation about coronavirus that they had?
Yeah, so I kind of just stumbled into this Joe Rogan, Elon Musk interview. He had been talking about the coronavirus on his earnings call, and then, of course, had some various Twitter meltdowns and ended up on Rogan's podcast, which is just one of the most influential media outlets on the internet. His view count for the Musk interview right now is at over 12 million. So they got to talking about some of the aspects of the coronavirus and together sort of downplayed the impact of the virus. So one of the things that they repeatedly said was that the death count is being overcounted because of these CDC guidelines. But in reality, experts agree that it's very likely that the COVID death count is a conservative underestimate because of limited testing capacity, testing backlogs, and deaths that happen outside of hospital settings. They also allege that doctors are engaging in widespread Medicare fraud to receive higher rates of reimbursement by improperly treating patients and victims in order to get a larger payout from Medicare. Okay. And not only is there no evidence that this is happening, I'm not saying that's impossible, it's not happening anywhere, but there's no reporting that this is happening, but it's also a very aggressive allegation that doctors on a wide scale are violating the Hippocratic Oath. So, but in general, go ahead.
To be clear, they're saying that doctors are saying people have coronavirus to get more money, even though those people do not have coronavirus. That's the allegation.
Not only that, but he also said that they are improperly treating people and putting people on ventilators who don't need ventilators. Which can kill a patient who is on a ventilator and receives that doesn't need it. It can shut down the entire body. And so it is, there's a lot of aspects to what they were saying, but none of this is reflected in reporting.
You know, one of the things I've been curious about is I've seen Elon Musk's tweets from the beginning. I mean, he's been downplaying this and spreading what seems like pretty clear anti-scientific misinformation from the beginning. I hadn't actually known what Joe Rogan was saying about it. I mean, he's given a lot of credit about being very curious and open-minded, not dogmatic. Is this one of the things where occasionally it seems like he gets really influenced by the person he's talking to and just agrees with whatever they're saying? Or is this consistent with prior conversations about coronavirus during the pandemic?
So Rogan is known for sort of easily accepting premises brought on by his guests who are making arguments without challenging them. But he also, there's other guests that have been on his program recently in just the last couple of days that have been pushing their own theories about coronavirus. This bizarre interview with a fitness influencer about vitamin D being a factor in whether or not you're going to get coronavirus. And I would just say overall, like it's an abdication of responsibility to be such an influential person who has such a captive audience and not being vigilant to what is a very important information campaign. When you're trying to get people to act in a way that is very different from their daily lives, and you're trying to get millions and millions of people to do that in order to save lives, you have to be consistent in what you're saying and listen to experts. And it's not a game. This isn't a Ben Shapiro interview. This is a matter of life and death. And yeah, I think that it's important to recognize that there's something bigger at stake here than just, you know, these sort of like petty liberal conservative arguments that happen on normally on his interviews with high profile guests.
You mentioned like Ben Shapiro interviews. I can sort of assume that when Ben Shapiro or, you know, Fox hosts, when they spread misinformation, their audience both accepts it but also wants it. Like they like that stuff. It seems like Joe Rogan's audience, it's more of an open question about whether, you know, because they're not just like one partisan group or anything like that. Do we have any evidence as to how they might be reacting to the spread of misinformation on the show?
Yeah, so I'll say two things about that. I think that one of the things that makes Joe Rogan so influential is that his opinions and show often sort of is able to evade this left-right discourse among media outlets because he is a comedian, because he has on such a wide-ranging array of guests, and because he isn't considered someone who is an influencer specifically in the political sphere, although he is very influential. But at the same time, I think that there is a growing rift between him and his audience. If you look at his subreddit right now, people are seeing that he's not only spreading misinformation, but also sort of downplaying the hardships that are faced not only by people who have lost their jobs, but people who have lost loved ones.
Mm. And I saw a reference to, I just wanted to make sure about this, because about that he might be either advising against or not communicating sort of the necessity of wearing masks. And I bring that up because I know that I've seen Laura Ingraham has been saying that wearing masks, there's no scientific basis for wearing masks to stop the spread of disease and things like that. So what form did it come in for him?
So he's posted on Instagram and also said that it's a, you know, massive inconvenience to wear a mask. He sort of flip-flopped on that in the Musk interview. So a lot of his messaging on this has been really inconsistent. But yeah, a lot of what Rogan and Musk discussed has a lot of overlap with what is happening in the right-wing media sphere. And that Laura Ingraham is a great example. She originally was very pro-mask before widespread lockdowns. She was pushing for masks, and she's since like flipped on that. And there, these people who are engaging in conspiracy mongering and pushing a political agenda related to COVID are rife to give inconsistent messaging, attack public health experts, and undermine this massive campaign to save lives by sort of inserting their own conjecture into this conversation.
You know, I'm glad that you said that he at least seems inconsistent on the masks. That seems to indicate that perhaps he can switch back to, you know, being responsible, telling people to wear them, especially because we talked about on my show, The Damage Report, earlier today, a study showing that men are less likely to wear masks, even though coronavirus is apparently more fatal for men, and that they apparently believe that wearing masks is uncool and it makes you look weak.
Mm-hmm.
And so because apparently a lot of American men are absolute morons, they need these guys that guys look up to give them the right advice. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin is posting pictures of himself wearing a mask. Joe Rogan is another one of these guys that like guys consider like a real guy. So it would be really nice to have him being consistent about the need to wear masks, not only for your own safety, but also so that you don't spread it to your loved ones and end up killing someone close to you.
Yeah, there's no reason that these people like Rogan and others have massive influence over young men who are on the internet. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a matter of being responsible and communicating coherent public health vital information to a crisis that has disproportionately affected men among other groups. And so, I think that that's a really good point. It's not about attacking Joe Rogan. It's that COVID misinformation is killing people. Mm-hmm. And when you take, and so it's really serious. It's not like a partisan fight. This is something that is a threat to everyone, not just in the States, but to the global community. That's obvious to everyone who is living through it right now. And, you know, young men, just like everyone else, deserve access to accurate information that will help them protect themselves and their loved ones.
Exactly. Yeah. And when we talk a lot about the misinformation being spread by, like, you know, Trump and Fox News and stuff like that, and I mostly do that just to warn people that these narratives are out there. With this, though, I believe that Joe Rogan potentially could change course. He prides himself on being open-minded and looking for accurate information. So I don't think he's going to watch this, but hopefully he will turn back to giving people the advice necessary to keep them safe. That would be my hope coming out of this.
I hope he does. I hope he has an epidemiologist on the show to talk about COVID instead of this random fitness influencer to, you know, go down these rabbit holes that they are sort of predisposed to talking about, just given the circles that he runs in with fitness stuff and MMA stuff. Like, those people aren't experts on COVID, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you shouldn't have them on to talk about COVID.
Well, and by the way, neither is Elon Musk, who I've checked and is very, right, very much not a doctor. So is my message to him. Get high with Dr. Fauci. That's what I want to see. Get him on there. Get him high.
Yeah. I would love to see Fauci on Joe Rogan. I think that would be a net positive.
I think so.
I think it would be great. Yeah. Yeah.
Madeline Peltz, thank you so much for your continuing work. Very much appreciate it. And thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.